Every second Monday, we bring you Matter of Fact, and we do so with Africa Check. And today we're joined by Kaylee Clifford, who is a researcher with Africa Check. So there are three fact sheets that we'll be going through today, and two of them are related, and one of them has to do with a conversation that took place right here on 702. Good afternoon, Kaylee.
Hi.
So how was, let me just fill our listeners in about exactly the claim that we're looking at. And the question really that we'll be seeking to answer is, do eight professionals leave South Africa for every one that comes in? So is there this brain drain going on? Eight professionals leaving with only one professional coming into the country. And this took place as part of a conversation that happened on The Money Show right here on Talk Radio 702. Bruce Redfield was exploring why South Africa's economy was in trouble. And the brain drain question came up. And I remember the story also ran, in fact, into the following day. And the brain drain issue came up. And one of the speakers, one of the guests in that discussion, is the one that raised this issue that for every eight professionals that leave South Africa, only one comes to our shores. Mm-hmm. So, Kaylee, just give us context about this particular claim.
Yeah, so I think, I mean, even if you're not a fact checker, that statement is one that your ears will automatically perk up at. I mean, those are startling numbers. Mm. So we thought we'd take a closer look and see what's the story behind there.
Yeah.
And our first step, as always, was to find the original source of the claim. Johannes Wessels, the gentleman who made the statement, was quite clear on the show, but also in communication with Africa Check, that this wasn't his own statistic.
Mm-hmm.
He said it came from a Department of Home Affairs white paper on migration,
yeah,
and that was published in 2017. So we already had some kind of a direction. We went to the paper, we found the stat there,
yes,
and we traced it back even further to a 2006 journal article.
Sure.
It was written by two individuals who conducted the study independently, and they found that, yes, for every one professional leaving South Africa, is that right?
For every eight leaving,
for every eight leaving one, yes, that's correct. So for every mm-hmm. eight leaving, one was coming in. But this was for the period 1989 to 2003.
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah. So it was published in the Department of Home Affairs' white paper in 2017. And then it was previously mentioned in 2006. But it looks at a period in early on in our democracy, which was, 1993 to 2003.
Hmm. Precisely. So wow, the first red flag was that it was quite an old statistic.
Mm-hmm.
And then our next step was to say, well, okay, if that was the case, then do these numbers still hold up today?
Yes.
And
yes,
we contacted the authors of the paper.
And do we know what methodology they used to get to this?
We do. And it's quite convoluted. I'll try to keep it as simple as possible.
Okay.
But,
okay.
The real issue with this claim is that data on immigration has always been quite tricky to come by. And even when these authors did the study in 2006,
yeah,
they had to supplement StatsSA's existing data. StatsSA, the way they collected data on immigration was through something called a B1117 form. And this was something that all South Africans had to fill out when mm-hmm. they were leaving from any one of South Africa's three international airports. So you had to give a reason to say why you were leaving. And that's how StatsSA collected the data. But it's widely accepted that their estimates are possibly an undercount.
Right.
And there are a number of reasons for this. One is that people don't always want to disclose that they're immigrating for various reasons, maybe to avoid administrative hassles. They don't actually want the state to know that they're leaving.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing is that sometimes people don't intend to leave permanently when they do leave.
Right.
But then they don't end up coming back. And by StatsSA's own admission, it's quite difficult to verify the numbers mm. on this form.
Mm-hmm.
So what the authors had to do was they had to then supplement StatsSA's data with data from the countries that South Africans were immigrating to.
Right.
Exactly. So they looked specifically at New Zealand, Canada,
Australia, UK,
and the US.
Mm-hmm.
And it's estimated that these five countries received over 70% of all South African immigrants during mm-hmm. that time period.
Mm-hmm.
So you can imagine it must have been quite a process, but that's what they had to do, and that's how they came up with their conclusion.
Right. And why one, only one person, only one professional, we should say, because this is a look at professionals, not all types of movement or immigrants.
Mm, exactly. And so that's what's also been tricky about verifying whether these numbers hold up today. And when we spoke to the authors, one of them said that it's not really appropriate to use data from 1989 to 2003.
Yes.
As you've mentioned, it was a time of great political instability in South Africa and a lot of change. And when looking to see whether these numbers still hold up today, StatsSA still does collect some data. But in 2003, when the Immigration Act came into law, some of the reporting requirements were relaxed.
Right.
So that B1117 form, you no longer have to fill it out.
Mm-hmm.
And there's actually no mechanism forcing people to declare that they're going to be immigrating. You can actually just go.
From what I'm hearing you say then, we have no idea.
It's anyone's guess, because StatsSA still collects some data through their community surveys, but this takes the form of a questionnaire, right? So it involves going to people's homes and asking them a set of questions. And the count of immigrants is then limited to those people who actually still have family in South Africa and can confirm, yes, my brother's immigrated or my son's immigrated. But if a whole family immigrates, they're not counted.
Mm.
The other thing is that it doesn't record occupations. So while we may be able to say X many people immigrated in 2018, we have no idea how many of them were professionals.
Right.
So that's why we've gone with an unproven verdict for this.
So what are some of the figures, though? What are some of the estimates or figures that have kind of come up from different sources, different pieces? Yes, it's inconclusive because of the lack of data for this particular question. But what have you come across?
So there are a number of different ways that might give us an idea or an inclination about the trends on immigration over time. One of the people that we spoke to is Angel Jones, the CEO of Homecoming,
the Homecoming Revolution.
Yeah, so they do very interesting work bringing African talent back to the continent. And she said they also are inundated with calls from around the world, people wanting to know what are some of the immigration rates, and they can't do it. But what they do is more small-scale qualitative studies. So they may contact two or three different independent schools and estate agencies and ask them, have you seen an increase in the number of people putting their house on the market because they're immigrating, or removing their kids from school because they're immigrating? And that can give you some kind of an idea. But even then, she cautioned us that you shouldn't confuse inquiries in the property market, which the South African media sometimes reports as being quite high, with actual statistics, because oftentimes what happens is people will inquire. They'll panic and they'll find out what needs to be done, and then they don't actually move.
They don't act on it. Yes, yes. Ah, okay. So no real figures. I see that one study actually estimated that more than 520,000 South Africans is the figure for that period that you mentioned between 1989 and 2003. So 520,000 over a 4-year period. So what you touched on earlier, I actually wanted to go back to it, is the sentiment or the belief that this is an underestimation.
Mm.
So this 1 in 8, not 1 in 8, the 8 out, 1 in is an underestimation.
Well, the 8 out, 1 in is a bit more accurate, I would say, than what StatsSA had come up with, because these researchers were so methodical in taking StatsSA's data and then supplementing it with receiving country data.
Mm-hmm.
But that to repeat that method today is even more difficult.
Yeah. So chances, could it be more, could it be less? We don't know. But I guess that has set that record straight as far as the rates of, and the people coming in. Did you look at that at all? Because it says one professional for every 8 that leave.
Yeah, it was the same with StatsSA's data and then supplementing it with receiving country data.
Okay.
Those are the figures we had.
Yeah, so as the receiving country, those are the figures. Very fascinating indeed, because it went on to be a new story, and yet it's old data, and it's also unproven kind of data. So before you quote that one next time, just be aware of the fact that it's largely unproven. Right, so when we come back, we'll take a look at some of the other claims or questions that have been raised of late, particularly pertaining to President Cyril Ramaphosa's cabinet. Last week, I commented about how I thought that deputies should be done away with, because they're actually not cabinet members. They don't sit in cabinet meetings. I thought that that would have been one masterstroke of reducing the costs of and the size of our cabinet, broadly speaking. But it didn't happen. It didn't happen in some departments. In fact, there were two deputies, even though he did reduce the number of ministries. So we'll take a look at that. And we'll take your questions, too, on this immigration issue. 011-883-0702-31702 for your SMSs.
702. Asanya Mosaka. Lines are always open.
On 011-883-0702.
21 minutes past two, and we are with Kaylee Clifford this afternoon, a researcher at Africa Check. I've shared the links to the previous fact check that we did on whether or not South Africa sees eight professionals leaving with one coming in, as it was shared in an interview that was conducted on The Money Show, and that one is unproven, as you've heard. But now we've got two issues to look at that pertain to our cabinet, the size of our cabinet. So over the past couple of weeks, a lot has been said because we were anticipating that President Cyril Ramaphosa will cut the cabinet, the size of the cabinet. He did. But was the cut deep enough is the question. And my view is that it wasn't, because he didn't get rid of deputy ministers. Should have gotten rid of many of them, and maybe in certain departments retained them, especially where portfolios were combined. But we also need to relook their responsibilities and what they actually do, because they're just an expense, a cost on the fiscus. So the team at Africa Check has looked at how much MPs earn and what do they do for it, as well as how much South Africa's cabinet really costs. So which one do you want to start with?
Shall we do MPs?
Sure. So how much do MPs earn, the moolah that they get to get take home?
It's a loaded question. So this is obviously a great area of interest. And so for a number of years, we've been putting together these fact sheets on how much MPs earn. And we start with our highest paid MPs. These are the Speaker of the National Assembly and the Chairperson of the National Council of Provinces.
Right.
Currently, Thandi Modise and Amos Masondo. Both members of the ANC both earn 2.82 million rand a year, or 235,000 rand a month. From there are, you know, several categories, and obviously it depends on the position that you fill. But we have deputy speakers and deputy chairs, senior MPs, committee chairs, minority party leaders, and then regular MPs.
Right.
But the bottom line is that no one in parliament is earning less than 1.1 million rand a year, or about 92,000 rand a month.
Mm. That is the lowest salary scale in parliament.
Yeah.
Okay. And what do they... Wait, there have to be benefits. There certainly are benefits to being in this office, right?
So over and above these salaries, there are what were described to us as facilities.
Mm-hmm.
And these are costs for things like 88 single journeys a year, whether
88.
By plane, train or car. It's travel and daily commuting costs for the MP and their dependents.
Mm.
It's tools of the trade. So... cell phone, laptop, tablet, and then there's also accommodation in three of Cape Town's parliamentary villages. So these are where MPs are actually housed when parliament's in session.
Yes.
So these are the facilities, but the exact details around what it includes are not actually made public.
Right. So, right, because the mystery around the ministerial handbook is... It continues, because many of us haven't seen it. I think the Mail and Guardian did publish one a few years ago, but whether it's been updated, what it looks like currently, it's hard to say.
Yeah, so the ministerial handbook is really governs everything from what MPs and cabinet members are allowed to spend on Christmas cards to protocol for picking flowers from the state residency, which, believe it or not, you need permission from the chief horticulturalist to do.
There's a chief horticulturist?
There is.
I didn't know that.
You learn something new every day.
Yes. Maybe we need a masterclass with the chief horticulturalist to cover it. Who knows? So how do they earn their salaries? But before you answer that question, I think this clip would be a good place to start. How do they earn their salaries? Doing what exactly?
I'm worried that this minister that we pay so much, Minister Maite Mashamaite, she's sleeping in parliament. And with that position, she's going to fall. Minister would have fallen. She's still sleeping.
Honorable member.
I don't know. What's happening?
That's not a point of order. Take your seat.
No. The minister is sleeping. You can't say that's not a point of order. No,
Josie,
are you condoning people sleeping now?
Josie,
we must come
for you.
Sleep here in Parliament.
Honorable sir, proceed.
We pay you. Don't sleep here. Hebanna. We're busy debating. You are sleeping. You are a sleepist. You think we're sleepist here?
Seat. Hey, honorable member.
Order, Deputy Speaker.
Yo. All right. So MPs get about just under 2 million rand a year to do some of that. No, but there actually are things to be done, things that need to be done.
Yeah. So in short, their job is to make laws. Mm-hmm. They provide this platform for public participation for national issues. And then they also oversee the work of the executive. Yeah. And how this happens is that their work is really divided into two different periods. We have constituency periods, which is when parliamentarians must make themselves available to the people that they represent. Mm-hmm. And provide them feedback about what's going on in Parliament. So in 2018, we estimated that of the working year, roughly 30% of that time was dedicated to constituency duties.
All right.
And the rest of the time they're in Parliament. They're attending joint sittings, they're attending committee meetings, and this is really where the
bulk of
the
work. And they have 50 different committees. So these meetings across 50 different committees.
A lot of different committees and a lot of different meetings. In 2018 alone, there were over 1,600 committee meetings. So these meetings have been described as the engine room of Parliament. It's where a lot of the groundwork gets done.
Yeah. So you did an interesting exercise. You looked at who the hardest working MPs are.
Yes. So there's this great information service NGO called Parliamentary Monitoring Group, and they actually collect data on committee meeting attendance.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can go onto their website called People's Assembly, and you can really look at any different MP and see what their attendance record is like. Some do really well. They attend up to 100% of all the meetings they're meant to.
Nice.
Some not so much. It gives us an idea of what is actually happening in Parliament and the hours that are spent in these committee meetings. But I think it's also worth mentioning that there can be any number of reasons why parliamentarians are absent from meetings. And sometimes they're traveling, sometimes they're attending different conferences, and sometimes they're part of more than just one committee. It's especially the case for smaller parties.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes. Just a question of numbers. But the hardest working MP, according to the website that you guys looked at, is Lerato Teko.
That's right.
ANC politician. And she attended 108 committee meetings.
Yeah.
And in second place was Simanga Mbuyani, who is also with the ANC, 89. So close to 10 is the gap there, the difference. So well done. And then Khaleb Kachalia with the DA with 83 committee meetings. And this is a sort of a top 10. And so it goes, but there isn't even a single EFF member in the top 10. There isn't a single EFF. Or even apart from the ANC and DA, let's say that, and no other smaller parties or no other parties are in the top 10 of MPs who attended the most number of meetings. But I think it's fair, as Kaylee said, with smaller parties, it can be a challenge because of just simply the number of bodies that they have available to attend all these various committee meetings. Very interesting indeed. Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you so much. That was Kaylee Clifford. We didn't even talk about how much South Africa's cabinet really cost us. That was probably going to put you in a bad mood when you look at how much cabinet ministers earn, as well as the president and the deputy president. But last year, of course, you recall the president declined an increase in salary, the 4% increase that was proposed by the Independent Commission for the Remuneration of Public Office Bearers. They recommended a 4% salary increase for the president, the deputy president and his cabinet, and the president said no, there shall be a freeze for now. Let's see what happens this year. Let's see. Considering that we have fewer ministries, and therefore ministries probably have more to attend to as a result. So will they be working harder and therefore thinking that they need to be paid more? But they also have lots of other perks, private cars, official vehicles, there's accommodation, there's travel, all sorts of other perks. That means that a chunk of this money goes into their pockets.